Hey, it's Jeff.
Hey Jeff, how's it going? It's Root.
Hi, good. Just for reference, it told me the conference was being recorded when I joined.
Yeah.
So you've already got it turned on. I know.
Yeah. And I'm actually going to turn it. All right, we're at Iacocca Salad Class number 2, a quarter 2. On the phone, we have Jeff, we have Steve, we have Peter, we have Ramon, we have Doug, we have Jeremy. Am I missing anybody?
Nope.
Cool. Let's hit it up and start with some wins. Over the last, couple weeks, you guys had Jay in coaching session. Did teleclass a couple week before that. Any wins to speak of?
Well, for me, and I know we're going to be talking about drama triangle today, but this whole thing with the drama triangle has really resonated with me, not only at work, but also at home, like with Steve and I think Ramon, things continue to happen in my life, my wife's life, my youngest daughter's life, and we all seem to be caught in this victim, capacity. And what's really kind of interesting is that each of us are calling the other one out, saying, "Look, don't be a victim. Start looking for options to be a creator." And so it's kind of everyone's getting Sagan's at home right now. So, I think that's a win.
Absolutely.
Hey, Ruth. It's Jeremy. Good morning. Just a simple win for me was just the more and more you start to be aware of this, that just how it can be used everywhere. And I think, like everybody said, you at home or anything, but you literally turn it into just any opportunity of how you decide you want to react to things. It's amazing that it can really have so much of an influence in how you allow your day to go. So it's pretty incredible stuff.
Yeah, I would agree. And I've got some I certainly have some stories from house building that I can share with you guys, which I've absolutely been arrested, and I've tried to rally the team in a creator mindset. So,
Rook, this is Ramon. I was sitting here trying to think of, since the drama triangle has been, introduced to us, and my goal was to try to find my opportunities to stay the hell away from it and the drama triangle, but that's like something that's very hard to do. And so what I've been trying to do as soon as I notice it more frequently at home, because that's where I seem to have a lot of my drama. As I think my door is a drama triangle, I walk through it. And I immediately try to place myself in specific roles to try to get the biggest impact of the situation that I can. And I have a 12-year-old daughter and a 42-year-old wife. And so I see them going back and forth, and Daddy always seems to get pulled into it. I don't know if that's what that was alluding to. I was trying to find a win in all of it, and I think that the one win that I can say that I picked up out of all of this is recalibrating. Because in that imperfect situation, I find myself, it depends on what I say and how I address each situation, I'm choosing sides. And so what I have been working on is recalibrating, putting my feet firmly on the floor and doing a whoopsaw moment. And just learning to listen better. And I think through my recalibration and learning how to listen better, I see the two adversarial sides working themselves out without me really having to find a position to choose a side. And so for me, that's a win.
Nice.
This is Peter. I've talked about the challenges that I've had with wholesale in the last month and a half or so. But the performance has really improved dramatically just by how I've spent time and focus on it. We went from last month where we were selling under 50% of our vehicles each week, and each week we were getting less and less on our cars, to the last 3 weeks when I've actually been physically at the auction and been more focused on it, we've gone from 85% sale at $300 a piece to 90% sale at $450 a piece to yesterday, 100% sale at $500. So we've continued to make improvements just based upon how I've come a little bit more prepared and focused. And it's really as simple as just being conscious of what your decisions are and what your options are. Opposed to last month, there was, on my behalf, there was a lot of finger pointing at, you know, what other people needed to do. And really the difference this month has really been taking ownership and focusing on what I could do. And, you know, it's as simple as just being conscious of it. And, you know, as soon as I was aware of what I could do and what I could change, we started to see a shift in the performance. So it's really as simple as just being conscious and aware of your options and that you are in control.
Yeah. I would agree. I think that awareness is a key point, right? Because you almost can never avoid the drama triangle. It's always going to happen in some form or fashion to you in life, whether it's personal or professional. What you can't avoid is being arrested for a period of time that robs you of awareness and choices. And that's really the trick, is how fast do you get back to awareness and choices? Kind of an old coach here at Sagan, and Stephen, and maybe a few other people here know him, Nathaniel, would tell me, how long are you going to lament the first strike before the next pitch comes at you, right? Are you going to sit there and whine about it for an extended period of time and watch pitch two and three and an entire side of the baseball team get retired? Or are you going to actually recalibrate faster and be ready for the next pitch and the next opportunity to be better and more aware than you currently are? And I think for me, at least, that's been a really helpful frame. Anybody else? Any other wins?
Hey, guys. This is Vince. Just wanted to share with you guys, pretty similar to Ramon, just, you know, really spending a lot of time with the CEOs on a coaching level. And just taking the time out just to recalibrate and just to, you know, game plan on what's my desired outcome when I go have a conversation, and how can I shift from rescuing or persecuting to coaching or creating or challenging. And it's just been pretty good. I can't say, you know, 100% across the board I've been successful with it. I still, you know, give in to that temptation of just, you know, doing it myself and rescuing, or you know, pointing out what the obvious is and being a persecutor. But just that recalibration period, I mean, even if it's, you know, quick second, quick minute, I mean, it's been working for me pretty well, and just something that's been very helpful with my coaching and my development.
Nice.
Bruce, this is Steve. The best tool that I have, that I found for me, is journaling. What I've been doing is in the evenings just kind of looking back over each day and then kind of capturing, okay, where did I show up in the drama triangle, and journaling's helped me understand triggers, right? And so I've been able to say, when this event happens, it triggers me into the drama triangle. When I find these events, it triggers me into the empowerment dynamic, and I try to explore why I get pulled into those, and simply by journaling, I'm more aware of, okay, this event is coming, and I'm starting to anticipate when those events are coming, and then I know in the past when this happens, I tend to go into persecution or victim or rescuer mode, and so just being able to write it down creates a lot more awareness, and I often find that FISB is when I just ask that question is, what is my desired outcome? It helps me escape the drama triangle much easier. So I think that the two big wins for me is journaling to capture the triggers and just early as I can during the event, just the FISB question helps me get out quicker.
Yeah. And we'll jump into a little bit more of the process of what FISB looks like. So,
see the trigger, Steve. Like, how do you bring everything back to center? I mean, is it typically at the pace you want it, or is it based on the pace of what the energy of the drama is trying to do?
Differs from when I'm able to, let's say, for instance, what triggers me is into the drama triangle. If I know that I'm going to go into victim mode every time Joy complains about me not taking over for Gavin, right? And so if I try to now be aware of, as the more I can anticipate, I know now I become a victim every time this event occurs. So just having that awareness I said, what are my choices?
Right.
So the more that I can journal about it, the more I realize that I'm a victim. I said, okay, what are the choices I have? I can choose. Sometimes I may just exhaust it. I may say, you know what, I'm going to choose to play the victim for 10 minutes and then stop. And so, because I don't try, there's some cases where I don't escape right out.
Right.
Sometimes I just have to experience, all right, I'll play the victim role for a little bit, experience that, and then switch. Sometimes I'll say, okay, I'm not going to play the victim role. I've got other choices that I can do, and I identify those up front, so when the event happens. And there's some cases where I don't anticipate it, and it catches me off guard, and I fall in, but I capture that on my journaling. So it really varies by the event. I think that the thing that's helpful is the more that I journal, it's something that's not going to happen in a week, in a month. I haven't journaled for 3 years. And so it's just a daily routine of the more I journal, the more I learn. And it took me a good 6-8 months to realize the power of just journal. And when I say journal, it's just a few questions each day, and it's like literally maybe 4 minutes, 5 minutes out of 15-minute. It's literally a 4 or 5-minute exercise every single day, and it just helps me. And it's amazing awareness. There's a tool Sagan has. I don't know if they'll introduce it here, but it's called performance journaling that deals specifically with drama triangle. That's really good. If you're looking to journal just about drama triangle, the performance journal is awesome for escaping the drama triangle. Sometimes I'll use that tool if it's drama when I'm game filming an event. But normally journaling is just a few questions I have each day.
Are they the same question?
So, along the lines of FISB, what is a FISB? I'm going to throw this out here, and, you know, I can choose to sort of call on people, but I'd rather not have to. I'm just going to throw out the question. Hopefully, one of you guys will jump in. So, what does FISB stand for?
Focused
So when you focus, what is the focus, you know, or what is your focus in the drama triangle?
Well, the focus in the drama triangle is on the problem and trying to separate yourself from the problem, saying, you know, this isn't my fault. You know, I have no responsibility in this. It's really focused on the problem. It's not focused on the end result. It's not focused on a desired outcome per se. It's focused on what's happened to you.
Whereas, that's right. Yeah.
In the empowerment dynamic, the focus, it could be the exact same situation, but the focus is on your desired outcome instead of what's happening to you.
That's absolutely correct. So when you focus, what's your inner state typically? When you focus on the problem, what's your inner state?
Well, I mean, your inner state, I mean, you're frustrated, emotional, sad, you know, it's a lot of negative energy. Versus in the empowerment dynamic, it's usually positive energy. You look at a problem more as an opportunity rather than a problem.
Yep. And so when you have that inner state of frustration, sad, anxiety, stress, whatever it may be, what kind of behaviors do you take?
Usually what I would say is you kind of shut down. There's not a whole lot of action. It's usually more inaction. You feel powerless. You don't feel like you have the ability to do anything or correct the problem. You just think that it's an issue that is happening to you that you have no control over. Versus if you're a creator, you believe that you have the power to change that opportunity into something positive. So I guess the behavior really is that you set a desired outcome and you lay out different actions that will help you arrive to your desired outcome.
Yeah, that's the shift, right? That's absolutely correct. And it's the shift from being reactionary to proactive, right? So let's continue with this. Somebody give me something that recently triggered them or created an issue for them that we haven't talked about. So I want to run through it as a framework for FISBE. Otherwise, I'll give you guys one, and you guys help me break it out.
No one slipped in the drama triangle.
That's pretty amazing. You guys are like just completely in control, like just nailing it. A lot of very aware and in control people.
I'll take a stab at it.
Or we're oblivious that we're in it. We're so fixed on mentality. We're an hopeless group. It's nothing you're going to be able to say or do on this call that's going to get us out, so why bring it up?
Yeah, I hear you. All right, so someone was going to take a stab at it?
Well, let me take a stab at it. Yesterday, one of my CEOs has been working with this customer for the last couple of weeks, and initially he's quite outgoing, gregarious, ingratiating. I mean, he can really connect with his customers. And what I this customer has kind of been a bit of a pain, because I think that this happens to be a customer that has received maybe really, really good service and now is expecting not only that, but more. Like, what else can you do for me? So the CEO now is getting frustrated that, you know, I've talked to the finance desk. I got an exception. I talked to the managers. I got another exception on something else, and I'm doing all this stuff. And boy, he was just smack dab in the victim role, and that the customer is his persecutor. And
okay.
So I listened to it for a minute, and I said, okay, what am I going to do to help, help him first become the creator and then challenge him rather than just trying to solve and rescue him? Although I guess
that's a great frame. Wait 1 second. So let's break down the first part of that issue. The request came in, and it looks like it's one request too many.
Correct.
In that moment, what is his focus?
His focus was that that this customer is just being too demanding.
Okay, great. And what interstate does that focus create?
Well, actually, I think it was more of kind of like helplessness and maybe frustration to the point where he was basically ready just to walk away from it.
That would be the behavior he took, right? And that's literally all I'm asking. I want to continue with where you're going, right? So if you can recognize that that's the process that he went down, I'm focused on the problem, it created something that I don't want in me, and now I'm reacting. And that's exactly how you break it down for any of your own problems, right? What am I focused on? How is it making me feel inside? What behavior is coming out of me that I'm not necessarily in control of? Okay, now continue with how you're going to help him shift.
Well, what I did was, we looked at, initially, I went to Creator and started looking at what can we do, to move this customer along. I reminded him about, his time and investment that he's already put into this. And we're very close to the finish line. I also employed one of the senior CEOs who's been around forever, sells most of the cars in the building, and he recited a experience that kind of normalized what my CEO was thinking. That I think he was kind of thinking, this is only happening to me. And here you have the most experienced CEO telling, I've just dealt with two of those in the last 3 weeks.
Right.
And so the challenge I had to him is to say, hey, look, together we can work on this and make this, work out. But my challenge is, do you want to keep going? Do you want to, give up and walk away from this, or do you want to, work with me, and we'll arrive at, how we're going to best handle this?
Yep. So let's break that down as the second half of this actual FISBE process, okay? What's the focus you actually want him to have from an empowerment dynamic perspective? What's the envisioned outcome?
The envisioned outcome is that he will continue with this customer and learn from it that there are different people out there that you have to be able to, deal with.
That's your envisioned outcome for him, but what's his envisioned outcome with the customer?
Well, at the time that we were talking, I think it was to just have her go away.
Okay. So you really want her to go away, or is he reacting to that?
Well, he was just reacting to it. That was his emotional state at the time.
Right. Presumably, he wanted to close the deal with her, right?
Right. Exactly.
That's the envisioned outcome, is to close the deal, sell a car, right? If that's his envisioned outcome, what does his interstate need to become?
It needs to be positive. I mean, he has to look for I guess.
Yeah, keep going. I mean, you're on the right track. I think there's no right answer here, right? Ultimately, his interstate, I'm going to project that maybe his interstate needs to be something along the lines of continuing to connect and be in that, gregarious state that he typically is in when he first meets customers. Right?
Right.
that sort of space he inhabits about just meeting the need that a customer might have and how he can actually help them. Servant leadership, if you will, somewhere along those lines, right? So that's potentially what his actual interstate needs to become. What behaviors would he need to take as a result of that interstate?
Well, he'd have to be proactive. He would have to, I think in this particular case, have to fall on the sword. One of her concerns was that he wasn't being communicative with some emails that she had.
Okay.
And I think it what I would term is falling on the sword, except take ownership of her perception of what the situation is and move on from it. Put it behind him.
Okay. That's right. So let's gain from what happened here, right? Customer comes in, she's pretty demanding, he's met a lot of her demands, he's gone to bat with her, for her, a couple times with the managers, and now she keeps coming back at him with stuff. In the FISB-Brahma triangle space, his focus is on too many requests and a frustrating customer. His behavior is frustration and anxiety and just maybe a little bit of anger, maybe a little bit of dissonance and sort of space away from her. And the behavior he takes on is he just starts to avoid or he cuts her loose, right? Let her go. I don't care for her. Now, if we flip that, in the empowerment dynamic, the focus becomes on continuing to meet her needs to get her in a car. Right? And the behavior, or the interstate that he needs to have is that initial interstate of meeting needs and gregarious and sort of skillful in a way that he usually shows up.
Right.
To get to his next set of steps, which is more than likely put the email behind her or the trigger behind him, and continue on as if he needed to get towards an outcome, right? And you can actually put these up in two columns. The focus in one, bad customer, too demanding, etc. The focus in the other, how do I get her in a car? How do I actually help her? The interstate in one, anger, frustration, tired, right? All of those things. The focus in the other, or the interstate in the other, is gregarious, skillful, working towards meeting needs, understanding where she's at, and trying to have empathy for what she needs. And then the behavior, let her go and just move on and be pissed, or stick with it and figure out how to meet needs and move past what she's initially said as maybe a rub and fall on the sword, to your point, right?
Right.
That process, just going through and breaking it down, even in a journal format to Steve's point, can be incredibly powerful because you start to notice over time patterns, consistent triggers, things that get to us. And once we have that awareness, we can actually get ahead of it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Reactions? Anybody? Thoughts?
Hey, Rube, it's Peter. I had a question. Would it be appropriate for the CEO to admit to the customer that they feel like there's a disconnect and ask questions about where the customer has felt disconnected? Or where the customer has felt that the CEO has missed the mark, would it be appropriate for someone to admit that and try and ask questions on how to correct it? Or, you know, what's an appropriate response?
That's a good question. I mean, without knowing too much of how the actual process flows between CEOs and customers, what I would say is that there's always space in any human relationship to sort of walk through the story I'm telling myself, or here's what I'm perceiving, here's how it's making me sort of focus on, am I getting that right? And matching that up against the story that they're telling you, right? Do you think about the trust formula? I believe we covered that in Q2. That's a big component of it, right? Credibility is one thing. I don't have a doubt that any of your CEOs could get me in a car that they say they can get me in. Reliability, more than likely most of them can. But it's that empathy, right? And really, it's about intimacy, trust and empathy together that most people tend to fall down on. And intimacy and transparency in and of themselves is really what you're talking about. Hey, I don't feel like I actually hit exactly what you said, and here's where I feel the disconnect is. Would I have that right, or is there something else that you're seeing in this dialogue, in this exchange, that I could be doing better for you to meet your needs? if you come from a creative perspective, I think there's always an opportunity to engage in something that feels vulnerably honest and yet still progresses things forward. That's my take. I'd love to hear Steve, Jeff, someone else's take on this, because I think it's a really important question, and I think it could have a lot of impact on how even the CEOs start to approach when there's a breakdown.
The thing that, Steve, the thing that we have tried over the years, probably haven't done it as consistent, is when it comes to CEOs and how they engage with the customers, we wanted to approach it in three ways: care, curiosity, and commitment. So I care about you as a person. I care about you achieving what you want to achieve. It starts with that. If I start off the conversation with caring about me selling a car, I'm going to show up in a different way. Versus if I begin the interaction of I care about you getting a good outcome, and I'm not immediately attached to my result. So it starts there. Then curiosity is, why are you feeling the way you're feeling? To Peter's point, is the check-in. It says, hey, I'm curious as to why you feel I may not be giving you the best approval, and I'm curious that you think you may deserve better terms. Help me understand that, right? So there's a level. It starts with care. Then there's curiosity, and then there's a commitment to doing the best job that you can. And if you can walk away saying, I'm committed to doing the best I can do, and I've reached that point, then it's fine. And if you made the sale or didn't make the sale, as long as I started out with care, I expressed some curiosity through the process to explore where I may be off course, and I'm committed to giving my best every time, then I think if you do those three things, the numbers will fall in your favor over an extended amount of time. But if I try to approach each individual transaction with how do I make that sale, I lose the winning formula of care, curiosity, and commitment. And sometimes I can get what I want, sometimes I can't, and I go in and out of transactions. So if I go with just my desired outcome right at the beginning to sell a car, if I hit a streak of bad luck, I'm going to fall more into the victim and persecutor role. If I begin the process with care, move to curiosity, and then to commitment, and I do that every time, then I'm more likely to spend more time in the empowerment dynamic, because I can control the care. I can control the curiosity. I can control my commitment to get better. And as long as I have this sense of control, I'm more likely to be in the empowerment dynamic. When I cannot always control what someone's going to interpret, what someone's going to do, what other choices they have to buy elsewhere. So if I focus on, you know, those things, I'm more likely to end up in the drama triangle because I lose control.
You know, it's interesting. I hear you talk about care quite a bit, right? And I think that that is another expression of empathy that comes from the trust formula. And it also takes part, and you compared it up against self-orientation, really, about I just want to make the sale, right? And those two contrasts, I think, can be really impactful to break down when sales don't happen the way we want them to happen or when they don't happen at all. Where in the trust formula did I potentially not live up to my best?
We see that in our NPS results is we can make a lot more sales and we can have the customer be a lot more flexible if we start off with care and curiosity, because they connect with us easier. If we start off with the self-orientation of, you know, I've got to sell a car, you've got to buy a car, let's hope they line up very quickly and early. And if they line up quickly in the process, we'll make the sale. But if they don't line up quickly in the process, we often don't make the sale. Whereas the other, when you start off with care and curiosity, even if we don't line up in the beginning, we'll come together more likely somewhere in the process and end up with. So the success rate of care, curiosity, and commitment, in my opinion, far outweighs the self-orientation model, because basically, unless you are driving customers that are absolutely committed that in the very beginning, they've done all their research, they understand the market, and you have the exact car they want at the exact price they want, you'll make that sale. But but absent those things, then it can get into confrontation, and we will probably lose that battle.
Hey guys, this is Vance. I think for me, I mean, I deal with those situations quite a bit, and one thing I always go to, I put myself in a situation to where I always look at what could we have done differently to get the desirable outcome. You know, are there steps that we could have, adjusted early on in order to get to that desired outcome that we wanted from the start? And I always try to look, inside myself first to make sure that I'm not in a situation where I wasn't wrong, or I wasn't, in a situation where I could have done a better job of getting the commitment from the customer. Because I agree with Steve with the care and curiosity of the consumer, but still, you could put yourself in plenty of situations where if you're just simply making mistakes on your part, you know, you will feel like a lot of these deals are a struggle because you're not getting what you want from the customer. So I always challenge a lot of the CEOs to focus on the outcome they desired and what could have we done differently from the start to get there, and then we use that as a tool to move forward and of course to get that desired outcome that we want now.
The danger though, the risk there, Vance, is that if you start, it doesn't change my desired outcome. My desired outcome is still to sell a car. But that's not where I start. If my desired outcome is to sell a car, and the process is care, curiosity, and commitment. But if I start out with just, I've got to sell a car, that comes across a lot differently. And what I will tend to do is ignore things like someone is earlier on in the process and they're asking questions about the car, and immediately, what do I want to do? Let's get a finance app. Let's get you approved. And the customers are like, wait a second, what about me? And we're thinking, no, it ain't about you, Mr. Customer. It's about me, and I know I've got to get a submittal, and I've got to get you approved, because if I don't do that, you're not going to buy a car from me. And so what we're doing is we're skipping the care that, what we really want is the customer to accomplish what they want to accomplish. Let's make it about them first, us second. And then we use curiosity to make the customer, to connect with the customer to feel that, yeah, we do care about them. Curiosity shows that we care about them, and now I'm committed to helping them resolve their problem. They have a transportation need. I'm committed to solving that, and the way I commit is offer the best solutions that I have. These are the inventory that I have. These are the cars that fit your need. This is the financing I can do. This is what I can give you for your trade, and here are how my options weigh out in the marketplace against other cars you may be looking at, right? And that process, but if I just go right into my own needs, I miss the care and curiosity and the opportunity to connect with the customer, and it creates some of the tension that Doug was saying that customer felt is, hey, wait a second, I don't feel you're really answering my questions. I don't feel, and so what can be often interpreted is this customer is just working me over. This customer is, not getting, always, making me do more and more and never going to be satisfied. And what the customer is really saying is, I don't feel that. You haven't really connected with me. You haven't answered my questions. You jumped the gun. And so by doing that, the CEO is saying, gosh darn, I'm getting frustrated because they're not giving me the apples. I've got them approved. I'm ready to go. and he's trying to achieve what he wants, but skipping over listening and what the customer wants.
Hey, this is Jeff. I think there's a real difference to my observation using talking about the drama triangle versus the empowerment dynamic in the mindset of the CEO that's engaged and being successful versus the CEO who's not. I think a common trait I see in the guys who are not successful, the way they're very much in victim mode, to pick up on your theme, Steve, they're very much focused on, you know, the customer's sort of almost not quite an inconvenience, but they're, you know, it's about what they need, and it's, and, you know, and then they start to blame, you know, it's the customer's fault, it's the bad credit, it's the rainy weather, it's the, you know, and they go into victim mode, and even their interactions with the customers become very self-centered, because I'm now a victim, and if you don't know, you know, if you don't want to do exactly what I want to do, you know, then it's you know, it's your fault, not mine. You know, versus the real successful CEOs are always in that creator mode and that coach mode. Even creator, they're always looking for what's the right solution for the customer. You know, use Gene as an example. He's always looking for, you know, what's the right solution for the customer. He's always communicating with the customer and coaching them through the process and coaching them through what their options are. And I think that for me, the stark difference between the successful ones and the unsuccessful ones is the beginning mindset of the CEO. And how they relate to either the drama triangle or the empowerment dynamic. And then the techniques they use, I think, come to the ones that you're discussing there.
So we've heard quite a bit from Stephen, sort of how he views care and that orientation when you start. Anybody else have a perspective on this that you can tie into FSB or the drama triangle or even the trust formula?
Well, I can just
say perspective, you know?
From business, Ramon, what I was hearing, and I was trying to fit in the story I'm telling myself, but what I was hearing was that the care, the curiosity, and the commitment are definitely solid pieces for success. And so I guess what I was hearing Steve say is, when we find ourselves successful, is we start with care, we lead to curiosity, and then commitment. But what we fail at is we jump right at commitment, then we don't give a damn about the curiosity because we already showed the customer we don't care, because we're looking for our commitment from them first, as opposed to lining up the three steps to get our commitment to them, that we're going to work our best to educate you and take you through the process and do what we need to do to either help you accomplish what you want to accomplish in terms of buying a car, get you everything you need, get everything on the table. And we've been kind of doing that backwards.
Yeah, here's what my big assumption is. I'm assuming you have multiple ways to capture a sale.
Right.
You could say, I am going to start up every sale with, how do I close this customer? And that's where I start off the sale. That's what you find in most dealerships, is I've got to be able to figure out a way, how do I get, first it's basically, how do I get this customer in the door? And I will tell them whatever I need to tell them to get them in the door and to buy the car. Right? And what I'm saying there is, if you have the exact car they want at the best price that they can find, then you have good chance of making that sale. But I'm saying that's not generally the case. I'm saying is, you could take that approach, and whether that's 5%, 10% chance of closing, whatever it is, I'm saying the chances increase if you put that aside and start off with having care about a customer, saying the first thing I'm going to do is make sure the customer achieves what they want to achieve. Let me explore and discover what it is they're trying to achieve, and then be curious as to why they're trying. What we may find about curiosity is, because this is what I care about. I care about Doug getting the car that he wants. By curiosity, that's going to help me interpret what it is Doug really wants. If I just start with care and move right to commitment, I may assume that Doug is saying he wants this, but through curiosity, I found out, wait a second, Doug, actually, that's not really what's most important. What's most important are these things, and he's actually more flexible. He doesn't necessarily need a 7-passenger SUV. It might be nice, but he only has 2 kids. And actually, as I hear him talk, it's really gas mileage. And he actually, you know, drives a lot. And so, you know, maybe I could say, if we have SUVs, 7 passengers, you're going to give up about 5-6 miles a gallon. And if you're driving, Doug, you mentioned 18,000 miles you drive on your last, you've had your car 2 years, you've got 36,000 miles. Yes, 18,000 miles a year at 5 miles a gallon. You know, here's what this is the extra cost that you're going to have.
Right.
You know, is that what you want? Can you live with it? Would you rather spend the extra money getting a 7-passenger, or would you prefer to save that money and get a 5-passenger knowing that you only have 2 kids and they can support you, and here's the road? Doug says, wow, I never thought about that. Thank you for bringing that up. You care about my budget. Now I'm more likely to move deeper and get a commitment. And that's the difference, as opposed to Doug calling me and saying, I'm looking for a 7-passenger, and I'm going, all right, I got to find the 7-passenger, and I've got to close him on the 7-passenger right away. And I miss the opportunity, and Doug feels a little pressure. Okay, Steve, well, I'm not ready to make a decision just yet. I'm certainly not ready to do financing. And I hang up, and he calls another guy who does the care of curiosity. Who do you think he's going to go see? So the same guy's got the 7-passenger, and he's got the 5-passenger, and he's given Doug more options, and he shows it more care and curiosity versus the other guy who's just said, forget about what you want. I'm just trying to close you on what I can sell. And that's where I'm betting that we can win. And I'm not saying we'll capture everybody, but I'm saying the percentage, if we have 100 people, I'm betting we'll capture more through care, curiosity, and commitment than we will through, and it's a better, not only a better experience for the customer, think of it's a better experience for the salesman. Because if he starts with care and commitment, he's in control of that. He can have success with that. Whereas if he's starting out everyone on just trying to get his self-orientation, he's going to have some wins, he's going to have some losses, and a good capture ratio is, what, 15%? So this guy's got to fail 85 times out of 100. He's going to go and do the drama triangle doing it the old school way. That's the difference. And that's what Jeff's point is, what does Gene do? And why do a lot of our managers get frustrated at Gene? Because he's trying to take care of the customer. He's working the managers to get the customer what they want. And that creates a lot of, but it's what makes him good.
Hey, Ruth, this is Jeremy. I want to add that I love this discussion. I agree with it 100%. I think in my world, am I treating my customers with the same care, curiosity, and commitment? And that's not a person trying to buy a car. It's Ramon, Peter, it's CEOs, it's everybody. You know, and am I doing that? Am I taking that same approach to try coaching? Yes, to try it, to, you know, all these things. And if I didn't just try to get Ramon to finance, you know, or try to jump right to recon. Yeah, what better outcomes could we all get?
Right. I mean, it's
interesting to hear the discussion and hear, I mean, you know, Steve, just playing back what I heard, there's a pretty heavy advocacy for a process that's in place. And it sounds like there's maybe a little bit of internal sort of it's not necessarily pushback, but it's just a healthy tension between where people tend to naturally go versus where you would want them to be.
That's what I think it is. I think it's just a natural human behavior that we have to break and really help them understand, look who's having success. We have, you hear this name, Gene. Gene's been with us 5 years, and he's constantly, no matter what the marketplace has done, what the changes we've made internally, every change we've made, it hasn't disrupted. The guy's literally never had a bad month. And it's amazing where markets have changed, strategies change, messaging has changed, locations have changed, people have changed. And yet no matter what changes we make, that guy always leads the sales department, no matter what. And that's, to me, it's just because of his approach. And his approach is care, curiosity, and commitment. That's what he does. And to Jeff's point, he is constantly focused about what's within his control, and his outlook is, dictates his inner state. His inner state dictates his behavior, and his behaviors dictate the activities he chooses to spend his time on, and those activities allow him to achieve greater results than people who are spending time doing different activities.
Good stuff, robust conversation, fairly specific application of portions of the drama triangle, at least an orientation of the drama triangle towards how the CEO is going to actually start to create a different type of connection with customers that come in. Any takeaways as we kind of round out the last 5 minutes?
Creator. So it's very important to be conscious of what's going on. And And it's okay sometimes to be in the drama triangle. It's going to happen. Sometimes it's for a minute, sometimes it's longer. But if you're conscious of it, then you know you have choices. And so that's the biggest thing for me.
Hmm. I like it. Awareness. Anyone else?
For me, it's what I find is when I'm in the drama triangle, if I tend to focus on what, I'm more likely to stay in the drama triangle. When I shift the question to who, I find myself I can escape it much more easily. So instead of just saying the fizzy of what's my desired outcome, that's the what, a lot of times what I'll do is if I'm feeling like a victim or I'm starting to persecute, simply asking the question, this is my desired outcome, and not saying what do I have to do, but who can help me? Who can solve that problem right along with me or for me? And simply recognizing the fact that you have other people, I find that I can escape the drama triangle much easier as opposed to, because sometimes if I say my desired outcome is this, and then I'm like, oh my gosh, how am I ever going to find time to do that? How am I ever going to be able to achieve that? And all this stuff, I sometimes find I can even go deeper even though I'm focused on my desired outcome but when I switch to the who to say, okay, here's my desired outcome, who can help me achieve that? That, now I almost become a creator, and then I'm likely to go to that person and either coach or challenge them. So that's a big insight for me.
Nice. Know that we're not in it by ourselves, and how do we go leverage people around us, especially as a team? It'll be an important sort of point of connection as we continue to work through leverage team management. So.
Because most of the desired outcomes are who questions, not what questions.
Nice. Okay, well, we're at the hour. I want to give you guys a reminder. Make sure you're working through your implants, especially your weekly practices. Looking forward to seeing some posts. Thanks for the engagement.
Thank you, Roger. Thanks,
Roger. Take care. Yep, bye.